I'm sorry, we can't make the microphones work just right. We're getting a little bit of feedback. So instead of the screeching, we're just going to talk a little bit louder. Thank you for coming here today. My name is Tom Hennig. I'm the general manager for the CSD. And everybody here knows why you're here. And we wanted to put together this open house question and answer period to help give everybody the correct answers to some of the things we hear is floating around is in social media and stuff and rumors and stuff here at the Rancho Marietta Special District. And so that's why we're here. I'm the general manager right here. I have Kelly Benitez. He's our security supervisor. Paula O'Keefe is the director of administration here at Rancho Marietta. Michael Fritchie is our director of operations. And John Merchant, he's one of our directors. I want to be very clear, this is not a committee meeting, it's not a board meeting. This is just a public meeting. We only have one board member here, so that falls within the rules of the Brown Act for our district, which are the rules we have to follow. And just a little bit of housekeeping. We're recording this meeting. We're gonna post the recording tomorrow or the next day, an FAQ portion of our webpage. So if you go to our webpage, you go to, is it Prop 218 FAQs?
Yes.
You'll see somewhere in there, Prop 218 FAQs. We will add this recording to it so everybody can hear what was said and if there's any questions. Oh, we can use the microphone?
Yeah, we can use these.
Okay, I guess we can use the microphones. That's good. It's real important that everybody who talks comes to the front. You can tell us who you are, or you don't have to. Be polite, show good decorum, no personal attacks, just be respectful of everybody in the room. If this meeting gets out of hand, we'll take it as a bad idea and we'll just stop the meeting. We're going to be here until 7, and I figured some people might want to cycle through, might not get off work early enough, so as long as people have questions, until 7 o'clock, we'll be here. And then there's no time limit. If somebody wants to stand up and, what do they call that, a filibuster, where they just keep talking and talking and talking for 2 hours, then we'll just do that. But we really, really just want to be transparent with our answers. We put together a very simple little listing of where the $41.44 comes from, and that's the rate increase on the sample bill for the residences behind the gates, right?
Correct.
And it's pretty similar for those at the Village and Marietta Gardens, too. So to begin with, I just want to start entertaining questions. And whoever wants to go first? Yes, sir.
My name is Jeff Moorhead, and I'm a resident of the South. And I just want to make a few comments. I guess the first comment is that what I have to say is not meant to be personal. I know some of you, and I know you to be a people of good reputation, but these are the concerns that I have, and I want to express those with you. This latest budget request is certainly, in my opinion, and those of my friends, compromised some of the credibility of the CSD. The rate increases are, in our view, exorbitant, and I believe they demonstrate to some degree a lack of sensitivity, especially to the senior citizens on fixed income in this community. These rate increases, and I used to work in the public sector, are astronomical compared to my experience. I was looking at the budget, and I don't need to have any answers. I'm just giving you my thoughts, and then you can go from there. I noticed that 40% of the budget that I could see, at least on one of the flyers, was salary, and 14% of that was a salary increase. I could be wrong on those numbers, but I know that the inflation rate is now 8%. It's probably going to go up to higher, but I also think that if you've been reading the paper, we're heading towards a recession. There's no question about it.
Jeff?
Go ahead.
Would you like us to try and answer your questions as you go, or do you want just... Do you want to make a statement?
I might just make a statement, and then you can go through it if you'd like, and you can point to the point. Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing that I have a concern about is I think the community services put out a flyer in January, February. They talked about the need for an increase in the water budget of 19%. And one of the things in that was they stated that the homes. Now, maybe I misread that. Maybe that was a misquote from the top or someone.
Do you recall a document in January or February talking about water rates going up 19%?
I don't recall specifically. I think overall the Prop 218 is a 19% increase, if that's what you're referring to.
It's referring strictly to water, my understanding.
I don't recall anything strictly
to
water.
Okay, I'll try to go back on that. I guess, and I don't understand this, but we do have right now, we're getting a lot of increase in homes, obviously. We've got five developments either completed or in the process of being completed, more than we slated. The other concern I had was you want to increase reserves over a five-year period, and I talked to someone over in the community across the street in the trailers, and of course, a lot of those people are really under a tight budget. And they're wondering why this can't be stretched out over 20 years. That was the thought that was there. So I want to put that idea. And finally, I just want to give you a couple things that I think would be appropriate right now, just based on the angst of the community and wondering why this is all coming down on us now. There was a comment about requesting a forensic audit from the state agency to find out what's really going on, because some people question the finances of the board right now. And the one thing that I'd like to suggest is suspending increases for 1 year, depending what the economic conditions are going to be in this community. So with that, that's all I have to say, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Now, would it be the pleasure of the group that we try to answer some of those questions now, or somebody want to come up and ask questions?
Answer.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll start. Discussing the five-year reserve versus 20, it was the board requested that we put together a program to once we cleaned up our reserve asset, our fixed assets and our reserve program, they asked us what it would take to get to 60% reserve in 5 years, and that's the numbers we produced. The $21 increase between water and sewer over the next 5 years will get us to close to 60%. And that was the board wanting us to do that. 20 years, is something that you could look at, but for 20 years we haven't been putting enough money in reserves, and we find ourselves here today. We can talk about reserves a lot. We're in pretty strapped shape for having money available to take care of our aging infrastructure. We're finding instance after instance for very high cost repairs. There was a repair on De La Cruz earlier in the year that was twice as much as we thought it was going to be. There's a valve that was 14 feet below the ground that had failed. It was basically bolts had rusted off of that valve. We have about 40 of those valves, as far as we last know, throughout the district, buried at different locations at the same time. So $80,000, if we have to replace 10 of them next year, that's $800,000. And the road repairs in certain areas that we have to do when we fix these items, and the number of pipes that are 40 and 50 years old have us very concerned. We are having a large number of water leak repairs. You may recall about 16 months ago or so, there was a pretty significant rolling earthquake that came here in through Rancho Marietta in Northern California. Ever since that time, we've been seeing an increase in the number of water leaks, and these are pipes that were installed a long time ago, not up to the current standards, that are failing. They're leaking, and there goes our water. And the one on De La Cruz could have easily have been a sinkhole if we had not jumped on it pretty quickly, because it was getting worse quickly. You talked about the 14% increase in salaries. That's because we added a couple of positions and we reinstated a position for patrol. It's the staff on average, the represented staff, if they're not at their top step, are they have negotiated salary increases of 3.5%, and if you get the 5% as well, so that's an 8.5% increase for most of the represented staff if they haven't already been at the top of their wages. We've also created a second tier of employment opportunity for our gate and our patrol officers. We've had a massive amount of turnover because of the salaries. You see Taco Bell can't hire people at $18 an hour. Our starting wage for our gate officers is below $18 an hour. And retention of staff here is very critical, because this is a very
complicated system, especially when you're talking about letting people in at the gates and doing it efficiently so you don't have backups. You said, why is it all happening now? It's happening now because we have a board that is dead set on improving the district's reserve position and being prepared to deal with catastrophic failures that we see coming down the way. Probably, and if I get off track, Michael will help me out here, but I can speak to these. We have a lift station that's next to a fairway by Bass Lake. It almost overflowed about 4 weeks ago. And it wasn't because of a rainstorm, it's because it quit working. It's about a 25, 30-year-old lift station. And what a lift station does, it takes waste from your drains, gathers it up, and every now and then, when it almost fills the tank up, a pump turns on and pressurizes it to a point where the waste can go downhill again. If that lift station had failed, if we had not caught it, it would, raw sewage would have meandered across the fifth fairway of the North Course into Bass Lake. That would have been a major EPA violation for the district to have to live with. And that's just not the only place where these things are having troubles. There's tons and tons of deferred maintenance that we're trying to address through building up on the reserves and being more proactive in repairing and upgrading some of these facilities. I saw that somebody said something about requesting a state agency to come in and do a forensic audit. We would welcome that if that's what the state wanted to do. We have an extreme amount of turnover here in at Rancho Marietta, in large part because of the wages, in large part because of the remoteness of the location. And skilled labor right now, if you try to hire accounting people, it is really, really difficult. Everybody that we're talking to is having the same problem. Most people now want to work from home, and this is not the type of environment, at least for the first few months, where a person can just never come to work and work from home their whole career. And getting qualified applicants who can understand a fairly complex government agency's finances is very difficult. Paula has done a great job pulling stuff together, but she can't be the controller and the accountant and the account payable and the payroll person all at the same time. So that is that's your answer to your question on salaries. It did go up 14% for our represented staff, max of 8.5 a year. Some of the gate patrol officers have gotten early evaluations to increase their pay because we want to retain them. And then the unrepresented staff, we're giving wage increases based upon industry averages. So you do salary studies. And so the board decided that they wanted our unrepresented staff, which comprises us, as well as some people you know in the field, Travis Bohan and Ron Greenfeld, Amelia Wilder, our district secretary, and two operation guys. They've got a salary adjustments that put them at the medium within our industry. And that is the question, that's the answer about salaries. I think I got them all. Did I hit your points? I mean, a couple of them are comments. They're not really questions.
I'm sorry. The only other one I had was, two of them actually, was the spending increases for when you're paying the observation of the economy and probably address the security issue, which would be under $20 on top of what you might want to recommend. So it would be actually an increase of about $60.
Tell me what you mean by that, because I want to be clear on how to answer your question.
Well, because my understanding is that the agency is about hiring an outside agency to do security rather than retaining it internally, and what the cost would be associated with both. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding of what I'm reading. Now, of course, I get to be wrong on all this.
and a lot of this can be guesses and speculation and stuff like that. What we're doing as a district is we're following the directions of our board, and our board has not asked us to explore contract security services. Ted Hart is in the room. I've met with Ted several times. He makes a good case, and I've said publicly that I believe if we did go out to contract security services, the district would probably save about $500,000 a year and what it costs to run the security department. That's my opinion. I've done two private security RFPs, or bids in my days, with two different law enforcement agencies, and I'm fairly confident that that's a number we could hit. There's a cost to doing this. Now, if we were to bring in private security, most of our officers would probably get rehired by the company that were to come in here. And there's the cost is also we still have to administer it. And we still have to have a supervisor like Kelly on our team as a permanent employee to help manage the liaison between the residents, the private sector, the commercial sector, as well as the agency that we could potentially hire. So we have not been asked to investigate private security. We have been asked to produce a budget that we believe is fair and representative of the needs of the district, which is what we have. If we were to go private security, there's an upfront cost. And again, until we call, for instance, CalPERS and say, if we're going to eliminate these positions, how much are you going to demand we pay right now? We have not reached out to the union and said, if we're going to eliminate these 6 or 8 or 12 Teamster positions that are currently stationed here at Rancho Marietta, what do you guys want to do about it? Because I would guess the Teamsters might be upset if we start eliminating union positions. But it's all the cost of doing business. It's all doable. But we did a survey. The survey did not support heavily going to private security. The board has not asked us to investigate private security. If they give me direction to, I will. And Ted's done a great job of reaching out to, a couple companies. One I think is very credible. And I don't think they have all the costs that they think they're going to run into out here. But it's not far from being the truth, that their ability to do the work, their cost, I think they're pretty far off. But I'm confident that we could save $500,000, 20% of the security budget, if we went private. And what was the other one? I'm sorry.
I'm concerned about these increases. We're getting into a very bad economy. Can I talk to them for just a second?
Sure, John.
They still work anyway.
Yeah, they work.
I think that one
makes you might. One thing that I think got lost in the fact that we didn't get credit for it when you amortize over a 3-year period. The year the pandemic began, the board voted unanimously at the time to not increase rates one penny. So over the last 3 years, if you were to amortize the cost, and this one looks dramatic, there's 1 year out of those three that there was no increase whatsoever. Part of what we're paying for here, paying for personally as a board, I might add, is I went back and I researched the rate increases based on the average bill for inside the gates. And I took a 10-year period from 2006 2016, and that aggregate over the 10-year period was a 2.7% annual increase. And in that 10-year period, there were two rate increases in which the board voted to actually reduce the rates. And the way that gets done, because we're kind of zero sum, in that we have to pretty much bill you for our operating costs. I mean, short of reserves, what happens is everything that we bill you, we use to fund the district. Reserves is a set aside and an additional charge. And the way that aggregate came to 2.7% is it was basically neglect for what we were collecting for reserves. We're at a point now in the district where our asset base is probably a little bit better than $55 million. The first 20 years that we ran the district, we had newer infrastructure, and we had a great benefit in the fact that everything to that point had been funded by previous developers. Okay, the first real significant expense we had that shows up on your bill now is that $6 we collect for our contribution to the new water plant that we built in 2014. Prior to that, all of that water plant and all of that infrastructure was paid for by the pension trust fund and the initial developers. We're not there anymore. And our reserves are in the 20% range against a $55 million asset base. So it is cause for concern. The one thing you mentioned that was significant was, and I understand it, believe me, I am retired and I live on a fixed income. Is the folks in the village have concerns. There's a project that we look for down the road, and we're not quite sure where it's going to happen, but it isn't going to be all that long.
there's a water system underneath that village that was built in 1974. Okay, we're going to have to pay money to identify where it really is, because we don't have very good plans, if any, to even tell us what's underneath the ground. Some of that is actually running under people's houses. So at some point, we're going to spend, and let's get into six numbers, somewhere in the six numbers, just to analyze the problem and understand what it is. And then we're going to spend seven numbers to fix it. So there are a lot of issues, and Michael points to them, that need to get fixed in a short period of time. And I understand that when you reserve for a water plant that we just built in 2014, that the majority of it, not the very expensive filters that go inside, but the majority of the plant itself can be reserved over a much more spread out period. But some of this stuff is getting really old, and it really needs attention. Then the last thing I'll do is, just as it relates to security, if you put security into a contract in a private environment, okay, it relieves us of burden. Is every time you get an average bill, and you look at that bill and you say, my bill is too high, 25% of what you're paying for is security. And security is not a utility. I've done competitive rate analysis on 10 districts in Sacramento County. And the one thing I can't compare is security, because nobody else does it. The one thing I can't compare is sewer, because it's all supported by the county. I can't compare stormwater, because it's all supported by the county. So when I take those county fees and I put them together, and I put their solid waste fee in, which is Cal Waste, the guys that pick up your garbage, and I put in the cost of their water, which comes from a giant hole in the ground or comes from a very big lake in Folsom. Okay, I get a competitive rate analysis showing from the bottom to the top probably a $30, $35 swing. Okay, that's based on what I did in January. And the difference is, then I have to take 30, 40, or whatever is going to go on down the road here with security, and I have to add it in, because I can't compare that competitively, because no other district supplies it and no other community asks for it. So I hope that sheds some light on what we perceive the problem to be. And from a board standpoint, this is my last point, I don't particularly wake up every morning thinking, geez, what can I do today to raise my CSD bill? So, we live in the same place you do.
Jeff, I think there was one more that we haven't addressed.
I think I talked about the suspension of the increase pending what's going to happen. I mean, things are going to hell in a handbasket. We all know that.
Well, suspending the increase would mean that we'd have to adjust monies on where they're going, because we have to run a water plant, we have to run a sewer plant. We're regulated by state and federal agencies to do so. We also have to manage the drainage, the stormwater within the district, because we're responsible for erosion throughout the whole district boundaries. We also have to have a proper trash pickup system. And so all those costs go up. And the only way, if we don't raise fees, the only discretionary funds we have are within the security budget. And that's why, in addition to all this you're seeing with these increases, we're also going forward with a potential for a special election, which our polling agency thinks is very likely to pass at a certain level. And so we're moving forward on that, and hopefully in the November ballot, you guys will be able to make a choice as to what is best for you. And I have to be really clear, as a government agency, we're really not allowed to be in favor of one thing or the other. We just have to do the job that you're paying us to do, which is collect the funds, provide the services, try to balance the budget, try to do proper reserving for the future problems, and, you know, we deal a lot with our staff. So whoever wants to come up next, ask questions, we can literally answer a question at a time.
Hello. Nicole Williams. Thank you for the email. I appreciate it. So I probably am going to take Jeff's lead and just share some thoughts and then allow you guys to follow up if that's okay. So some statements here. I'm concerned with the fact that obviously we have some infrastructure issues. I don't think you're going to get argument from just about anyone in the community about that. But trying to fix that in just a 5-year period over rate increases is what's concerning. It's obviously taken us far more than 5 to get in this situation, and my personal hope would be that it takes us more than 5 to get back out of it, especially at the cost of our ratepayers. In addition, I'd be curious to talk more about the non-represented pay increases, but I don't think there was a direct answer to Jeff's question on what that looks like for those non-represented individuals. I understand union implications, that's what I deal with day in and day out at work. I know those things are not easy to bargain and negotiate whatsoever, and that's putting it lightly. But the non-represented side of things, alternatively, is very flexible. So I'd be curious to understand why there isn't alternative lower increases, a little bit of ratepayers meet us in the middle situation. I am also want to share a thought associated with the board not asking for additional review of contract security, and hopefully I'm not poorly paraphrasing what you stated there, Tom, but my thoughts on that are, one, to be frank, and I mean this with no disrespect at all, I don't know that the board is accurately representing every single resident in Rancho Marietta with that thought. I think there are quite a few individuals that have thoughts and concerns, and in my opinion, I don't know why we aren't researching every single option under the sun to get us out of this situation. And not to repeat myself, but if it took us 20 years to get into it, I would hope we have all sorts of creative solutions on the table to get out of it, as opposed to just rate increases. And so I would like to see additional research being done, and I would ask the board that they get behind additional research in all sorts of areas. I'd also be curious to understand, you had stated a bit ago, and I genuinely don't have any historical context on this, but I would be curious to understand, you stated that there were funds from past developers. I think you may have said that, John, but I apologize if I'm misspeaking, and instead it was Tom. I'd be curious to understand what's happening with our new developers across the street that are actively building right now. I genuinely don't know, so I'd love some education on that point. The other thing that I would want to understand more about is, you said the polling agency thinks that it's very likely for the November increase to pass. I was on the call that occurred in April, and that wasn't the impression that I got, at least that not at the highest percentage. So I'm curious if there's been additional thought into what percentage may move forward on that November ballot. And then my last question, out of curiosity, is I would like to understand how many protest letters have been received by CSD thus far.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Tom, could we activate that mic?
Yeah, I think.
A little hard to
hear. Oh, it's on.
Well,
it's on. We'll just ask people.
Move it over where we can
talk.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Nicole, thank you. And thank you for going back and forth with questions and answers. It's very helpful to hear stuff like that. We've already answered that the speed of increasing the reserves, and then your comments about the board and the contract option. So what's going on with developers? Currently, there's two sizable developments underway right now. There's the Riverview project, which is slated to be 140 new homes, and they're building. They're about ready to request water meters for their first 5 homes, or model homes. And then they're lined up to build another 30 or 25. I think their first phase is a total of 30 homes. There's some talk going right now about their second phase, but there's nothing real definitive. Everything's dependent upon the economy. And there's the retreats over by the golf course between the first and ninth hole, and between the ninth hole and Murrieta Parkway. That's a total of 62 homes. I believe they're going to start requesting water meters pretty soon. I expect probably 30 of the 120 or the 200 homes between the two subdivisions. I suspect 30 to 40 might get built
in the next year. Now, each of those developers, for each home, they pay about $11,000 in reserve fees. And those fees are earmarked for specific types of projects. About half of that is earmarked towards what's dubbed as water supply augmentation. And that's money the district can use to expand the capacity of our storage facility out here for recycled water. It's funds we can use to enhance how we manage our water supply to be more efficient with it. They also have funds for security. Every new home pays about $1,250. I'm looking at you, Mike, because it's $1,250?
$1,200.
Every new home pays $1,200 towards security at reserves. And what we do with that fund, those funds, is we expand our security footprint. You may not have noticed that we have a lot more cameras this year than we had last year, and we will have a lot more next year than we have this year. We're finding that cameras in law enforcement, cameras are considered force multipliers. Kelly will tell you almost every month during his report that we've turned evidence over to the Sheriff's Department, the Highway Patrol, and they're actually making arrests based upon the cameras we use. But the security is $1,200 per house. It'd be great if we could assume that all 200 homes are going to be built in the next 12 months. Like, they can obviously build thousands of homes in just a few months over there on the other side of Grantline Road or White Rock Road. But we can't bank on that to run our business. If there is a rush on these homes being built and we do collect more reserves, we can slow down the reserve contributions. But until that happens, we don't want to do that. There's a whole discussion we could have about what other agencies do to fund their infrastructure upgrades. If you live in Sacramento and you look at your tax bill, there's probably 6 or 8 Melrose bonds that you're paying off, and school bonds, and university bonds, and fire department bonds. We don't have those here. We don't have any debt here, Rancho Marietta. The only debt we have is our own. We borrowed money from ourselves, and it's being paid off at $6 per month by all the homes who had a water meter at the time the plant was built. And that's the developer question. Did I help you with that, Nicole? The next thing you said is, so Timothy McCarney with True North Consulting, he was our pollster. We hired him back in about September, October. We worked with him on building a questionnaire that he supplied here. We had a big old town hall meeting at the country club in
June 22nd.
Okay, and about 75 people attended that. We followed that up with a series of 5 work groups right here in our building. Tim met with groups of 5 to 10 or 12 people, and he developed what he felt was a good set of questions. Timothy is somebody who knows Rancho Marietta very well. He's a golfer, and this is a place that he likes to play. So he understands the community, has friends here. So he was able to put together some questions. We provided samples of those questions, I believe, at a November board meeting. And then we didn't publish again until they were finalized. And then in February, he did the polling. Out of the polling, he asked the same questions 3 times. And if you're ever doing interviews, you're trying to investigate things, you repeat questions in different ways, and you see what kind of answers you get. And so we put in 3 tiers. We said to fully fund security with extra patrol officers and a whole lot of off-duty sheriffs during the weekends and during other evenings, you know, are you willing to pay $300? It was $298, but it's basically $300 more a year. And that polled at about 60%, 59-60% of people at the time. Again, pre-war in Ukraine, pre-gas going up, doubling. But at the time, about 58-60% of the people said they'd vote yes for a $300 a year increase. When we dropped it to 250, it became like 63%. When it went down to 100, it was like 73%. And so with his work, he determined that if we had, at the time, ran a ballot measure and said, would you be willing to raise your rates $171 a year to supplement security? That was like a 68% approval rate. And that's where we began the process of going forward with actually hiring a company to help us explain the black and white facts of what an increase in security would be and what you would get for that increase. And we're working on those materials now. And in the next few weeks, everybody will get a mailer from our company, Clifford Moss, and they do this for a living, and they'll start explaining stuff, and then you'll have opportunities to, I think they're going to have a little mail-in thing that you can put your opinion or vote yes or no on this or that, and then mail it in, you know, or you'll be able to go online, fill out like a SurveyMonkey thing or something like that. You know, this is why we hired them. They know what they're doing. And we're going to be doing public education, public outreach, as kind of like what we're doing here today. And maybe community members for or against want to also do public outreach and public education. And any facts people want, they can come here and get them from us. And I understand, you know, I have next door at my house too. I understand there's a whole lot of activity on social media out here. I don't read it. I feel like it's best that I don't. But I do help friends find dogs and furniture and stuff like that where I live. So, are those your questions?
I also wanted to understand what the non-represented raises will actually be. How many protest letters you've received.
Okay.
And then, sorry, just to clarify as well, so it seems like you're moving forward with the $171 per year, not the highest amount, which had the lowest polling results, correct?
Not yet. We don't know. But the fact that the 171 was kind of a high mark, the board felt, yeah, let's go forward with this, because today, more than half of the property taxes we collect here in the district, well, the county collects them. We get about, I think it's 1.9%.
One-tenth of 1%.
So of the property taxes you pay, we get a little bit. We actually get about, on average, about as much as we get in security fees for all the houses in the district. So about two-thirds of our property taxes are going to supplement security this year. It's more than that as budgeted for next year. And that is why the reserves are so poorly supported, because in an agency like this, you want your property taxes to go into your reserve funds. You want your services to pay for themselves. So with water and sewer and trash, we're regulated by Prop 218. So we say, here's how much it costs to run the water plant next year, so this is our rate. And by law, we have to do that. And that, what people are protesting is that. So if we can't raise those fees, and I'll get to your other question, if we can't raise those fees, we have to shift property taxes to support the operations of the things we are regulated by. We're not regulated by our security service, by the federal or state government or local government. As far as the unrep salaries go, there was a board meeting February? No.
It was October.
There was a board meeting in October where all that was published. It showed that the salary survey was published. It showed that like Paula's position was about 12% below the median. Michael's position was like 8% below the median. Kelly's position was pretty on par, but there's zero comparators for Kelly's position as a security supervisor. And Amelia's position was about 14% below the median. And so what the board elected to do was to take two bites out of that apple. So back in November, October, if Paula had 14% or 12, I think she was 12, she got 6% more in her wages. And then she'll get that other 6 to be at medium this October or this November. And we need to have competitive salaries. And the salaries here at the district are not overly done. I mean, my salary doesn't even compare to what salaries of other water district general managers get paid, and I really don't worry about it. But to me, if we're not competitive with the salaries of Paula and Michael and Kelly and Amelia and Travis and Ron, we're not going to keep them. It becomes a revolving door. And there's been so much change in management here in the district over the years, which is why we have these really difficult financial issues with reporting and preparing things for our auditor. We're trying to fix that. Does that help?
It does.
It's all published, Nicole. You could go to the webpage, pull it up, and you would see it, right?
Can I add something
sure.
to that?
Sure, Paul.
So, and to follow up with what Tom was saying, as far as the salaries go for unrepresented, what you see on our salary schedule is a range. So we have the bottom entry level, we have a control point, which is, I believe is it 6%? There's a percentage difference between the control point and the beginning of the range, and then we have the top step range. So what you see on the website is not necessarily what each employee is paid. We're paid depending upon our performance, depending upon our annual reviews, depending upon the amount that we were hired on. It may or may not, but it falls within that range. So to look at the salary schedule and think that we're all making the top step is really an inaccuracy, because not everybody is at top step. In fact, I don't think any one of us are at top step. We all fall within that range. And as far as our annual increases go, I know you did ask that question. We have the same ability to move between a 1% increase or an 8% increase depending upon our performance. So our evaluations are set different than the represented staff, who once they move forward with their annual evaluation, they get their 5% increase, and then they have their 3.5% increase January 1st. So ours are a little bit different in that there's the flexibility. So if we're poorly performing, we get 1%. If we're doing great, we get the 8%. But more than likely, we fall in between that, and it's typically around a 3 to 5% increase for the unrepresented staff.
What locations are you usually doing for salary comparisons?
Okay. I'll do the best I can. City of Folsom, Water District, Galt.
I can look it up.
We'll look it up and we'll get it to you.
It was published in the October board meeting with the personnel packet. We had a salary study conducted. It was the same salary. It was Coffin Associates that had conducted it in 2018, I believe.
Yeah, they're very common as a government
right.
salary
Right, and so
surveyor.
They've used very similar agency size to compare our salaries to theirs as well.
In that competitive analysis that I did on 10 districts inside the county, we're at the bottom. I mean, you can go look them up. On base like San Juan, 260, 265. Understanding, too, that while their economy of scale is overwhelming, San Juan, I think, serves about 160,000 customers. We serve 2,650. That works against us, not for us. When you see comments on Nextdoor and everything, well, you know, how come you're only at 2,500 people and you're charging this? Number one, we do water, so does San Juan, and that's all they do. We do sewer. That's all. San Juan doesn't do that. Sacramento County supports that. Stormwater, drainage, that's regional sand, $330 million budget inside the county. They support that. We do that ourselves. And finally, we do a complete, nearly drinkable quality water recycling program, which as part of our water right, we dump absolutely free onto two golf courses. And we don't really have a lot of choice there. So
I think that agreement was in place before the district was formed.
Yeah, and I'm not arguing that we shouldn't do it.
Well, you keep on bringing that up. But
yeah, I keep bringing it up, Mike, because there's a cost involved that we're billing back to our customers. That's why I'm doing it.
Let me ask you three questions, John.
Hey, Mike, can you stand up so we can at least hear what you're saying?
So in 2016, we had $400,000 in 2016. So, and I know, Paul, you're new here. So in 2016, we had a $400,000 surplus. What occurred from 2016 to today? Because we didn't raise rates in 2016 because we had this surplus there. And that was before all the development plans. And we did a new water plant. We have a backup plan for the existing plant that we use when we want to. So when you talk about reserves, I've been out here 35 years, pretty much as you have. I've never seen a catastrophic incident occur that's caused us to, all of a sudden, we don't have any money. RMA is reserved at about 90%, and there's millions of dollars. There's $400,000 in vehicle reserves. So instead of, and what happens now is we spend that money, not, if the car's got 16,000 miles, but the 10-year plan or 8-year plan, we buy a new vehicle no matter what. It's not out of need, it's because out of the schedule that we use.
Michael, kid,
so
what are you talking about?
So in 2016, we had a
four. No, cars with 16,000 miles being replaced.
I'm using the example of RMA's reserve, which is totally funded at 90%,
okay.
Which we've never tapped into it. What do you believe? I believe some of the lift stations and some of the stuff is at a level, but we have how many millions of dollars in reserves right now?
About $8.5 million.
About $8.5 million.
And that most of that's restricted, right?
But the majority, well.
But you can borrow from one reserve to pay for another reserve, and I would definitely give you my support if everybody saw that we had 12 miles of pipe that break or something's not working. But with the economy and the stock market going in the direction that it is, and I know, I understand you guys are doing good work. I'm not arguing the work. I just think the timing is not correct.
The one thing you want to compare with RMA and their reserving is I think you should take a look first at the asset base. They don't have $55 million worth of assets over there.
No, I know they don't have to.
They got it. The only thing they depreciate is an RMA building that, when they bought it, cost $750,000. Water plant cost $14.1 million.
Right.
My example is, in your years here, how many catastrophic events that we had since we lived out here where you had to tap into that reserve today?
Right. When you and I got here, that stuff was 5 years old. Now it's 30 years old.
So Mike, as
a new water plant, you got a backup water plant, you got a country club members responsible for all the pipes to get rid of the reclaimed water or to the thing. They just replaced the pipes. Okay, so.
And we lent them the money to fix the pumps.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because there's a lot of members, there's a lot of people that are not members of the country club. They used to be mandated at one time. So.
Well, that's neither here nor there on the pumps. I mean, we made the decision, and we were called out for that. We spent $100,000 lending, and we're getting paid back with interest.
Absolutely.
Money to the club that they didn't have to fix those pipes, because the last time water ran into the river, which was in 2006, by the time we got through with the MS4 permit, it cost us $1 million. Between the fines and what we had to accommodate to satisfy the regional board, so we felt like lending them the money was a good investment.
Because of the actions that different associations did that dumped the water in the Bass Lake and over to overflow in the river. So the district here had a little bit of responsibility of getting everybody involved in a problem that they had. But that's a different argument. But my understanding, my question is how much reserves do you really think we need in the next 2-3 years when the economy's going sideways?
Mike, the answer to that last question, based upon the work Michael has done with our consultants, if he were to have his way, he'd spend almost $8 million this year. But that would include eliminating chlorine gas at the water and the wastewater plant and converting it to a safer, much safer way of treating water. That also includes fixing the Granley's intake structure, a problem that was created more than 20 years ago that's never been addressed by the district, that we've got state funding to help us get that project started. And we have... We have to fix a drying bed at the water plant. We have to fix wastewater, the dissolved air flotation, the stuff that creates the recycled water. We have to do almost $100,000 in maintenance on that this year, or replacement of parts. We have a drying bed at the wastewater plant that needs to be rehabbed this year. We have, we have almost $600,000 budgeted to repair and upgrade lift stations that, you know, The spill you guys are talking about was recycled water that was shipped to Bass Lake during a rainstorm, and that recycled water ended up going into the Cosumnes River with overflow. These lift stations process black water, wastewater. If those things fail, the EPA is going to be all over us. OSHA will be here. We'll have fines to the high heavens. We'll have to implement all new procedures. They'll probably make us go and do all this replacement. So we're trying to get a whole... ahead of maintenance. It should have been taken care of over the years with these lift stations, with some generators that are way too old, that burn diesel like way beyond what we're supposed to be producing. And then next year we have to do the membranes for the water plant. Are you budgeting that all in 1 year, Michael?
No, that's just a portion of that. So we replace a portion every other year until they're at the end of their design.
So the membranes and the water treatment plant are about $200,000 every other year now, so there's about $800,000 worth of membranes. All those things are going to deplete our reserves. Is $8 million, I mean, don't we have 11 total and like 6 or 7 of it's in the water supply augmentation?
We do have 11 total, but we need to have 6 months worth of operating rate stabilization, so those funds don't
come out. So I hope I've answered some of your questions, Mike. As far as the $400,000 in surplus in 2016, I am making the assumption, but I wasn't here in the accounting, I can't quite pin down. I'm making the assumption that they put it into reserves, because that's the district's policy. Now that we don't have any surplus, that's why the reserves aren't being affected. Nicole?
Didn't quite get all my questions, so I apologize. I just want to steal a moment of spotlight, and I promise it will be quick. So I would just ask, you don't have to respond, I would just ask that you consider lesser non-represented rates. I'll tell you, my rate is 3% this year.
Exactly.
Yeah,
she's
I'm
phenomenal.
Right. So, you know, respectfully, given what we have going on, I don't doubt the validity and worth of your people, but I'm asking to find a middle ground there. Second, I want to understand how many protest letters you received. And
oh,
third,
that's right.
Should you go towards contract security and have to deal with Teamsters? I literally fight with unions every single day. You may not want to work with me after all my social media comments. However, I would always happily consult and help you out. And trust me, I can go toe to toe if I need to.
What, how many protest letters do we have right now?
We have 71.
Yeah, but let's be fair here. That I don't think we've seen the last of those.
There's
more out there.
Now, if somebody's sitting on a big stack of protest letters, it'd be nice to get them. So Melody and Allie and Paula and Tom and Kelly and Michael, we can do the data entry during somewhat normal hours. Because before any of these things have to be finalized, we get a letter, we go to that account, we make sure we haven't received one already, we validate that who signed the letter is actually somebody on the account. So if there's a whole bunch out there, I know somebody wants to do the big reveal or whatever you want to call it, and we're fine with that. That is totally 100% your right. So is anything you want to say, as long as it's nice somewhat. But that is your right. I mean, that's what we're here. We are here to serve you, and that's our job. But it would be nice to get that huge stack of letters so we don't have to work well into the evening, spending a whole bunch of overtime for the represented folks and life balancing time for us,
yeah,
unrepresented.
There's no intention to make your lives challenging. We've had very open discussion about that. So
okay, good. Thank you. Ted.
I ran into this thing last time.
Yeah, but pull it. There you go.
There
you go.
Is it picking up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I wasn't going to get up and speak tonight and let everybody else talk, but so much stuff has been thrown out here now for discussion, a lot of which I would like to give at least my version of what's here. And I think, and I'm doing this more for the benefit of the people that are here. All you people have heard me, you know, speak many times concerning security, etc. And so I'm looking at this, and we have gotten into a discussion now of where we're into so many little things. It's like micromanaging, okay? I mean, let's get back to the primary points. The primary point is that you're looking for money to be able to finance all of these things that we're talking about. The only place that you have any option of finding that is going to private security. And let's talk about those numbers for a second. Tom believes that there's 500,000 in savings. Well, let's look at the actual budget that's being proposed and what's there. At the present time, security costs $2.5 million. That's what you have budgeted. This is a proposal, and Tom has seen this many times, and a lot of the people on the board have seen it. What it boils down to is this. This company, well established, is willing to do this for $1.2 million. Now, you can say that this is not covered, that's not covered, whatever you want to. You could get into the longest discussion in the world as to what may or may not be. The reality of it is, the board has never taken the time to look at it. Since September of last year, I have been petitioning the board with letters, with meetings. I'm at every one of the board meetings for this single purpose, that if you're going to find some big bucks, that's where it's at. This is no disrespect to our security or what's going on. These are just facts. And as to the savings, Tom and I go back and forth in this discussion. He's got 500,000. Well, if you just take the mathematics of the 2.5 and 1.2, you got 1.3 million in differential. But let's accept the fact that there are a lot of little hidden things in there that you can't get to. So let's take a median average of what would be saved. That's $900,000 a year, every year. Now, you can argue this. You can put it up, I don't care how many times. But the reality of it is, I've taken the time to look at it. I've shared this with Tom. And I'm, by the way, I'm not picking on you, Tom.
No, I know that. I'm not worried.
And the bottom line of it all is that the board has totally it rejected this. They just will not look at it. And they base all of that on this survey, which you don't even want me to get started on the survey, because from my perspective, that survey is so far off base and so biased that it makes no sense. And part of the reality of it is that you would merely have to go back in there and take a look at it and to bring up the issue once again of how they frame these questions. It's amazing. They ask a question, would you be for private security if you save 20%? But nobody knows what 20% of what? 20% of nothing? 20% of some big number? The point being, once again, is the board, not you people, okay? John's here, and I'm not attacking John, okay? But the board itself, they're the ones that need to look at this. What we have are all these questions that are coming up. It's because the people, the community itself, is back here saying, what on earth is going on? And is there any way out of it? And what we keep talking about all the time is the necessity for all of these things. And I wouldn't disagree with any of that. The necessity of what you people are faced with, absolutely. But you have this question as to what you're really going to do with it. And I would say to all of the people that are here, the argument and the problem is with the board. This is nothing more than trying to dig out some facts so people understand what's going on. But they have to understand the actual numbers. And those numbers that I just gave to you, this contract, these people are ready to sign this tomorrow. This is not something that just came out of the air. I mean, I have spent a whole lot of time not going out to try and wreck our security. I have only one objection. How do you get out of this mess? And I don't believe that the board has gone forward with their fiduciary responsibility of trying to figure out how to do it. Thanks.
I can answer.
So I want to say a couple things. So Ted and I have talked over this quite a bit. I have reviewed, because I've done this before, the private security contract, or the proposal. I think their proposal is a little short, but not very far short. I also don't think when you speak of the cost of this agreement, you don't take into consideration the cost of the administrative overhead that is required by law that the district apply to the operational budgets. So about one third of our administrative overhead is applied to security. About another third is applied to water. Just less than that is applied to sewer, and then a small amount to drainage and solid waste. By law, as a government agency, that's how we have to distribute the cost of our salaries, of running this building, so on and so forth. So that's a big number missing from the number you have, Ted, and it's probably around 500,000. In addition to that, as a government agency, we would want to have someone like Kelly here as a supervisor to oversee the contract. So Lake Wildwood, where the people you talk to have the security, they don't have the same governmental requirements. Rancho Murrieta is the only special district in California with in-house security. And by law, we have to disperse the cost of running our agency to that operational budget. And I'll stop talking.
Okay. I'm glad that you hit on the last point. That's probably the sorest point that I have in all of this. And that is, maybe the security does not belong at CSD. Maybe it belongs at RMA. And the reasoning behind all of this is, if you mentioned the fact that this is the only operation, district, anything else in the state of California. Now, if we're the only one doing this and everyone else is doing the other, why in the hell are we in it?
Well, only you and I know that, because only you and I have been here long enough.
Yes. And we know the history.
And we know the history of it. And we had a situation many years ago where we were convinced that because the developer did not feel in those days, the developer being the pension trust fund, did not feel they were being treated equitably in terms of rates, RMA was concerned at that time. RMA ran security. And RMA was concerned at that time that the developers were going to say, screw you, and not pay the bill. And RMA was not in a position that they had leverage to enforce it. Somebody came up with the idea that, hey, if we transfer this over to CSD and they don't pay CSD, they will turn off their water. And here we are, since 1984. 1997, we all know what happened. We went out on Measure J and it passed with like 75%. Part of it was a problem, because we were told, and I voted in it, you voted in it, that, you know, we were rolling over charges from one entity to another because the law was requiring us to do that, and that from this point on, security would get a 2% increase, and everything would be fine. And it wasn't, because we outran that 2%. And what Mike alluded to was true, that when you ran up a surplus, you ran up a surplus because you got paid with a property tax allocation once a year, that 1%, 1/10 of 1% Paula was talking about, and we would bank it and put it into reserves. But now, as the cost of security has escalated over the years, we don't have the ability to charge that money through Measure J, so we take that money and we add to it from property taxes that should have gone to reserves. So now the only place we can go to get the reserves is back to the folks that pay the bill. So far, we agree. And I agree with a lot more. And you and I know we've had these discussions. It's not like, I don't know what the other guys are doing, but I certainly am talking to you. Because they're all on here.
And I appreciate it.
And you know what? You know what's happening is, first of all, I come from New York City. My version of security is probably different than some. You know, I look out the window, my car's downstairs, I'm secure. Okay, then I'm secure until I go down the stairs to see if the battery's still in it. Okay, so I'm really flexible, you know, and I'm looking for alternatives there. As it relates to security, if the protest is successful, you're right, the only disposable income left to the district to continue to fund its operations is going to come from the property taxes. And that money is money we're propping up now into security. So if there are cuts as a result of the protest, we're going to test it, because that's where it's going to come from, because there is no other place to get it. I agree that there are two other inherent problems, one of which is that the way the community has developed, particularly over the last 7 years, we now have a hotel, we have a 14-hour-a-day supermarket. We're in the process of getting the real attracting issues of a Taco Bell and a Circle K that's going to stay open late at night. We have the Starbucks. So what we're seeing is a result of of this outside the gate unprotected aspect is increases in crime. And it requires a different type of security on that side of the highway that it does on our side of the highway inside the gates. So how do we deal with that? The most convenient way to deal with it is to do exactly what you're recommending, which is to privatize it. You know, we make it back into a private entity. There would be a discussion you could have if it was a private entity that we didn't ultimately put it back where it was 35 years ago, and that's at the RMA. RMA could certainly administer that inside the gates. And the outside the gate, because it is a private entity, could be administered in another way. And I don't have that clearly defined in my head. They could wind up creating their own special district to administer it, or they could do it as a private collaborative enterprise between all the people that are over there, the shopping center, the village, the folks in the Murrieta Gardens, the airport, all of that. So there is an opportunity there. I don't think it's something we're going to flip a switch on and do in the next 15 minutes. I think what Tom's concerns and undefined parts of this remain to be seen is what's our payout to the union, what's our payout to the to the to the pension. But I don't think anybody's saying that we shouldn't consider it. And I will point to parts of the security study or the security questionnaire and to the meeting that we had where the employees that we maintain in these gate operations were loudly applauded. Not everybody agrees that this ought to be privatized. Now, at some point, maybe it's through the referendum or a bond issue that we put on the ballot or some other function, but people really have to speak as to how they want to run it. If they want to run it from a privatized standpoint, I'm cool with that. I'm all right. But I don't think it's representative as a whole to say, number one, that everybody here is dying to go to a private security, and number two, that maybe we ought to put it back at RMA. Personally, I would love to do that. Because this is a utility, okay? We're not a police force. And we do a really, really good job with that. And Tom said, you know, we had this done independently. 35% of our overhead allocation goes to security. And if you hang around here for a couple of days, you'll understand why. It's a full-time job. I mean, and we have Kelly to administer it now, and he's doing a fine job with it. But everybody else in the district, it touches everyone. And you know we got our hands full, water, sewer, and drainage, and development. Development eats up tremendous amounts of our time. We're not paying for what they're doing, but we're responsible for making sure what they do is correct, and what they do is paid for. So I don't see that anybody's inflexible here. I think at the end of this process, both through the protest. And through the process of deciding, we haven't decided whether we're going to put this thing out to a vote. Maybe we're going to get to the point where we're going to make a choice. And like I told you, and I've told you this, and you can validate it, I'm real flexible.
And I know that. This idea that the community may not want private security, I'm not here trying to sell private security. I don't work for these people. I go where the money is. After 60 years in business, I'm only interested in where is the money going to come from? And right now it's coming out of the pockets of all the people. And does it need to? And that's the question. And that is amplified by this is the fact that since September of last year, the board has refused. And I will say to the board, well, I've told the board this, they have refused to take a look at it. They just have this idea in their mind that this is what we have to only go in this direction. You're the flexibility. What we have to do is find two other people that agree with you so we can turn the board around and get something done. And, you know, it's just, it's a shame that this entire mess has upset the community. And it came about, Tom and I talked in September. I said, you're going to head down a road of where you're just going to stir this thing up if we don't get the facts out there. And this survey, I would love, I spent 30 years as an expert in court, and I would love to see this. I don't want it to go to court, okay? But if we hypothetically looked at it, this survey wouldn't hold up 1 minute in court as to how we're trying to find out what the people want. And what do the people want? Well, there's an old saying in Silicon Valley, where I came from, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out. And if you put questions out there, you can tailor them pretty much that come out however you want them. Thanks.
Okay. And on that note, we're taking a 5-minute break.
Oh.
I'm more confused now than when I got here. So my waters are more muddied than clear. But just listening to the conversation and really not going into the security aspect or the survey that direction, but just looking at these numbers that are going up mainly due to, I'll call it bat funding. I don't know if that's the best word for it, but
well,
reserves.
You can see you can see on the chart that $21 of the $41 in increases are pure addition to water and sewer reserves.
Right. So,
okay.
So
you got it.
My biggest question is, and probably more for you, Mr. Merchant, is it really seems like the board, because you folks have said you this isn't something that you have any control over, the board is unwilling to set that flow or amortization out more than 5 years. They seem very, am I wrong? They seem very rock solid that it has to be five years.
You're not wrong in that we made a statement that we supported an aggressive increase in reserves. And we made that based on some of the previous stuff we said, based on the fact that we have been under-reserved for such a long period of time. And especially with the addition of Michael over the last year or so, who has really gotten into our infrastructure and helped us to analyze where the weak spots are, and there are a lot of them. You know, that was based on that decision. The other thing, let me point out to you, and it doesn't matter how many times, I've been around here for forever, but it doesn't matter how many times we put out a 218 notice, the minute we put the 218 notice out, that is the increase, and that actually isn't correct. That's not what the law stipulates. The law requires us to publish that 218 notice, and it's published under the definition of the law that says once we publish it, we cannot raise the rates above that limit. When we vote on June 1st, when we vote on June 1st, we can lower it as much as we want.
When you say you, who votes? The board?
The board votes.
The
board will make that decision. 3 out of 5 people will be required to make whatever decision we make.
So either say hard and fast that it's going to be done over 5
right.
years, or...
And you know, I can't commit to anything because I'm 1 of 5, and I want to make sure you understand that. But, you know, we're not deaf. Okay.
And please understand, if they add 400 homes to this community over the next 2-3 years, you know, the reserve rates don't have to go up as much because there's more people contributing. The fact of the matter is, all these expenses grow, and there's been no growth in Rancho Murrieta until the past few years. There's a little bit with the 13 homes built at Retreat 23 May and Retreats West, near the clubhouse, and then the 78 homes built over here at the Gardens too. But other than that, this special district has remained flat for almost 15 years.
Yeah, one of the really significant numbers that goes along with the aggregate 2.7 increase over that 10-year period, from January 1st of 2011 until January 1st of 2021, that's 11 years, I think, or at least 10, this community built exactly 100 houses. So that, coupled with the aggregate 2.7 and a whole bunch of other stuff, the inadequacy of the security tax to cover this, to cover the cost of security, forcing us to take property tax allocations to prop that up, has put us in a precarious financial position.
Yeah, no, I don't think any of us doubt that. We realize it.
Yeah, and I get.
Breaks, I gotta,
yeah,
I gotta
and listen,
it.
Listen. I get personally. I'll speak. And again, I can only speak for myself. I understand. You know, I get it. I told you, I don't work either. You know.
I just hate to see. It's like, I get this feeling, and I may be wrong because I'm kind of new to all this, but it feels like it's a hill the board wants to die on. That's what I'm feeling. That's the vibe I'm feeling. It's like, this is the hill the board wants to die on.
Yeah.
They're going to stick to this five-year plan. No matter.
I'm an infantryman. We don't die on hills.
Okay, well, thank heavens. Let's just hope that the others, let's hope that there's three others.
I'm living
that
proof of
that.
That.
Yeah, let's hope that there's three others. And then the other thing, again, staying off security, because that would really make my head swim, is, I get it. All of your jobs are valuable, and you're probably doing more, the job of a person and a half, maybe. But I have never got, and I wrote down a number here at 8.5%. I've never got an 8.5% raise. I've never heard of a cost of living raise at 8.5%. I get what you're trying to do, and the study has all been done, but that seems excessive to me. And if those are the only two things that we can do, because the law requires that, you know, sewer be handled and you make sure that the sewer and the water and all that needs to be taken care of, so it leaves us, either we spread this amortization out over a time, and we consider how we do this by taking a little bit out of that salary increase. It seems excessive. So those were my two points on those things. Thank you for listening.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Kathy Ann Atkins, and I really appreciate you having this during the evening. And I apologize if I'm asking questions that have already been asked. I didn't get off work till 6. So my first question was, why are you sticking to the 5 years? But I have a feeling that that may change. I don't know. I just think, given the current inflation that we're in, that why not look at 10? Why not look at 15? So I would like the board to consider that. And I have a couple of questions. And one of the things I had was like, what about developer buy-in? So if the residents have 5 years to make up this reserve, and a developer sells a house 2 years from now, shouldn't that developer be paying 2 years worth of the makeup reserve buy-in or the?
I know what you're asking, and we can first understand that. Just, and I'm going to let Tom finish the question, but understand that there is to some degree, a misconception that we in some way are contributing to developer infrastructure. We are not. We do not do that. What you see being plowed around and the giant cement cores that are going in the ground, we don't buy those. That's his responsibility. It's Mike's responsibility to make sure it's put in correctly, so that, you know, it's not part of our reserves 5 years from now fixing junk that he put in the ground, but it is his responsibility to implement it, and it is his responsibility in a lot of ways to represent, to reimburse fees. He pays us per house $16,718 for various fees, okay, and they pay RMA about $4,000, so he's got $20,000 into it to capture fees, security impact fees that he's paying to catch up with us on. They have their own agreement where they reimburse each other as one bills. We got all this money from them for their portion of the water plant. Now they start paying each other back. So all that goes on outside of the realm of CSD, and we have no financial obligation to that. We spend a tremendous amount of time, overhead time, in administering development, which, like I pointed out before, we didn't do that in the first 10 years because we built 100 houses. Well, we got 100 in the process right now, and it's a full-time job for us. Just, you know, so when you look at, you know, shuffling responsibilities, it's a big chunk now of what we do. So you do the rest of the.
I don't know what's left to answer. Go ahead.
If you look at this as $2,100 over 60 months, or excuse me, $21 a month over 60 months, it's like $1,200. Let's say special assessment of $1,200. So if a developer sells a house in 2 years and the new homeowner's paying that $21 a month, they're only paying over 36 months. And so I think the developers should also have to pay 24 months to make up that special assessment. It's like this is, if you look at this as a special assessment to build up the reserve, they should be contributing as well.
So the developers, when they sell a house, we charge fees. We charge development fees. And John gave a number of 16,000, I believe. Some of the homes here pay $16,000 or $17,000 when they get a water meter, and some pay like $11,000. Just based upon some historical pipes that were put in the ground and the van, like all that stuff happened 20 years ago, and we're still doing the accounting for it. When a developer gives us money from getting a new water meter, those monies go into what's known as capital improvements. So that's improvements that go to expand the district's infrastructure. So for instance, expand capacity in, you know, if we're getting rid of chlorine gas and we're getting a more clean way of cleaning our water, that might be considered a capital improvement. The fees we're collecting from you guys through the monthly rates, those are for replacement of parts. Replacement of a pump, you know, the pumps at the Rio Oso water tank, they're in bad shape. They're very expensive and they're very critical to the infrastructure. To about 400 homes, because if we don't have those pumps pressurizing the system, units 3 and 4 don't get water. Units 3 and 4 is about everything up above Upper Guadalupe. So the monies we collect from the rates pay for repairs, minor upgrades, replacing the pumps in the ground, digging the holes, keeping our staff safe, replacing trucks and replacing other equipment. And I said earlier, if it does so happen that all these new homes show up, you know, then we can recalculate what it's going to take to get to 60% in the next 4 years, or what it's going to take to, you know, 60% in 7 years. And those things make a difference. If we were to kind of try to wait and do it in 15 years, we think by 10 years we won't have enough money to make the repairs that we feel are going to be necessary on an annual basis. We look at how much pipe we have in the ground. We're going to have to start replacing pipe that's part of the original pipe put in the ground to support Rancho Marietta, the valves and you know, large equipment like the recycled water plant, the wastewater plant, the membranes that are used to clean your water that you drink. Those are all very expensive. And if right now we're going backwards, we need to start going forwards. And once we start going forwards, you see that it's like the meter on your battery says it's charging. As soon as it quits charging, you know you need a new alternator. And so on and so forth. So I hope that helps. And any of you, if you have more questions, you can call us. Because we're ending this meeting in 22 minutes, but if somebody has questions after that, you're more than welcome to give us a call and send me an email or something.
If I may ask another question.
Sure.
I don't want to monopolize anybody's time, but so given the current situation of, obviously, it's not only reserves, and I totally get the reserves are important and they need to be replaced, but all of these other expenses and raises and stuff like that, what is the board doing to cut costs? And as a state worker, I can tell you I was subject to furlough days. And so have you considered furloughs?
No. We're not throwing out cost-cutting measures. We're maximizing the money we do have. I'm not asking staff to take pay cuts. I want them to stay here. I want them to keep working hard. I don't want to keep training new people.
And were there bonuses and large raises within the last couple of years?
Some people got sizable increases because their salaries were well behind the norms. You work for the state, you look at a job, you know what is it SA or, you know what different jobs make. And if you want to get a big pay raise in the state, you apply for a promotion. And we don't have that many promotions here. We're a very small agency. We have the same mandates that the city of Sacramento has, with the exception of we don't have a fire department and we don't do roads. But we do accounting, we do public safety, we do water, we do sewer, we do drainage, we manage the trash contract. We wear a lot of hats here, and it's a very complex organization that's very small. If you look at a lot of the water districts, the sewer districts, that's all they do. I mean, the complexity of the water that sits up there in Calero and Chesboro, that Michael has hired a company to make sure that the water is healthy, just like you would do if you had a fish tank. But we have these big bodies of water that we got to take care of. And if they go south on us, everybody's going to be unhappy, and the regulators will be on us right away. So asking people to take pay cuts, to take furloughs, is not on the table right now.
Several questions, but I just
speak
them
to
you. Sure. You want to ask them and we can try to answer them? I'm more than happy to do that. Or you want to hand them to me and I'll ask them for you? And can you tell me who you are?
Beth Bedaris,
okay. Right, Beth, if some of these questions have been answered, can I kind of roll through them?
Yes.
Did the district reject grant opportunity to cover costs for security?
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, everybody, mute your cell phones. That must be her son.
That's a scam. That's even worse.
Okay, no, we have never turned out a grant for security. There were never any grants presented us for security. That was a discussion we had with a person who came in here for a security meeting. And my comments at that time was, in my professional career, I've written and been awarded many, many grants for security services, everywhere from fingerprint services, other biometric type services, as well as hiring police officers through the COPS grants that happened in the Clinton era, as well as grants for mobile computers, wireless networks, and emergency systems. But we don't have those opportunities here at Rancho Marietta. If something presented itself, if we had the staff, if we had a grant writer on staff, if somebody at Rancho Marietta is a wonderful grant writer and they want to do some free service for us, we'd be more than happy to let them write grants for us. But the answer to that first question is no, and the other one is NA. The district seemed to be on track with monthly financial reporting, but over the last 2 to 3 years, and you are correct, it is very inconsistent. Why is the district having a difficult time of finding and retaining quality staff? What has changed? Boy, that's the magic question. Our salaries have not been competitive. We've had some very long-term employees leave, and replacing them has been very difficult. The whole world of accounting is trying to figure out how to hire good accountants. And I have no idea how this happened, but they all work at home. The big accounting firms are hiring people right out of college without doing background checks. This is what I'm hearing. That if you have a kid in school, tell them you can take accounting and finance, because the jobs are out there. It's hard to find good people. Our finance system is horrible. We use a finance system called Great Plains. It's not designed for special districts. And our reporting, when I got here, I felt was very inaccurate. Of course, then you have staff turnover and things get worse. We pass our audits every year. And many years ago, the auditor was telling us, you got to replace your finance system. After a while, he became tired of saying the same thing, so he quit saying it. Our auditor, we did an audit, we did a big financial review with the Poon Group about 3 years ago. They recommended we do a number of things. One of them was a cost allocation plan, which created this issue of administrative overhead costs. They also said you need a new finance system. So the board approved back in
February?
June. July.
Really? I think the board approved, it was more like October, the purchase of a new financial system called Tyler Encode. And Tyler Encode is a system that's very common within special districts and cities. It's hard to get people to drive out here now, even more so with the price of gas. And jobs are available, and why not work 5 minutes from home versus 25 miles from home? Why is the board in a rush to get to 60% over 5 years? It is my understanding that, and then you say, why not 10 years? And those are, that's a good question. It's my understanding that two of the current board members ran on the platform that they're going to fix reserves here at the district. And this is, it took a couple years for us to really get our handle on what our fixed asset inventory really was. Michael and his staff did a great job in the past 6 months doing so. We have a good reserve report. Now we told the board, what do you want? They said, we want 60%. We said, and I said, when do you want it? And they said, 5 years. And so if they come back and say 10 years, then we can change the number. Does it go from 21 to 1050? Probably not, because during that time, we also have major expenditures in specific years. This coming year's pretty heavy because of all the deferred maintenance we have on lift stations and generators to help run lift stations during power outages. I read a lot on Facebook about a 14% pay raise. We didn't get a 14% pay raise. Salaries increased 14%. We added a couple staff, entry-level accounting staff, to help us process and get better at our finances. I attended the board meeting via Zoom, and a resident brought up the admin overhead for security. Can you explain why admin overhead costs are so high? It's the cost of running a government agency, and we have Paula and her staff, we have the staff of myself, we have Amelia, we have attorney's fees, consultant fees, all that adds up to $1.7 million next year. And then that $1.7 million, 1.9, has to go to the operational budgets by law. We have to take administrative costs and apply them to what it costs, the proportion that's for sewer, the proportion that's water, proportion that's security. That's how that works. It's not an option. If under a contract security system, the RMA can say, yep, we're going to pay $1.2 million, and that's all they have to pay. How the RMA distributes their administrative overhead is none of my business, and I don't know how they do it. They probably don't, I'm sure they don't have the same rules we do as a local government. The Prop 218 notice stated large increases in insurance costs. What are the drivers for these increases? The drivers for these increases are, we have accidents, you know, our staff get hurt, so they end up having going on workers' comp, they get medical care, we have employees that we make settlements with when they depart. All these are things that you see happening at the board level. The cost to insure our dams has gone up like tenfold since the Oroville, and I could be totally wrong on that, but since the Lake Oroville incident with the dam, our dam insurance has gone way up. Automobile liability goes up. Our risk management over our employee injuries go up. We do as much training as we can so we can eliminate the back injuries and so on and so forth. But that's what that is. I heard in a committee meeting, and thank you for paying attention to our meetings, that the district is using a water number from a 2004 study. Why hasn't that been updated? A water usage number. In all the complexity of our finance system, the water usage number is what helps drive the calculation of rates. And we haven't changed that because we don't have time to come up with a new way of calculating water usage. A lot of districts have tiered water usage. Where I live, I think we have one rate, but I think Folsom has a tiered water rate, so people with bigger yards pay more for that added water, kind of like PG&E does. You guys have SMUD. I don't know if you have tiered times.
Yeah, it's a similar thing to what you see in electric. And when I did the competitive analysis amongst all those districts, about half of them now have gone to a tiered structure where the more water you use, the more money you pay. We're still stuck on a base rate. So, and I think the next state-mandated drought thing will probably fix that. I mean, we'll have to, at some point, we're going to have to do something. If we get a 20% mandate, for example, from the state, it doesn't matter how much water we have, we will have to honor that. Unfortunately, we can, you know, be outstanding citizens and reduce our water rate by 20%, and our revenue goes down by an equal amount.
But it still costs the same to run the water plant.
Yeah, it doesn't cost us any less money to run the joint.
If we use less water, we use less electricity pumping the water from the river to Calero. Okay, those are her questions. We have 10 minutes plus a few seconds. Oh, come on.
I have one.
Oh, good.
I can't get out. Can I ask it from here?
You can ask it from here.
Who are you?
Donna McLeod.
Donna McLeod?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Why are you losing long-term staff?
Well, retirements. Much better opportunities to work closer to home, make more money, have less work to do. That was one major departure.
Then why is there settlements when they leave?
Because sometimes, rather than when you're dealing with, and these are personnel related issues. Paula, keep me, make sure I don't say anything.
Yeah, we can't, some of that we can't discuss.
Well, in general, you can give generalizations, not details.
Generally speaking, California's a very litigious state. And when we let people go for various reasons, they often feel like they have the opportunity to sue the district for wrongful termination. And
so you're terminating staff?
Yeah, if staff are doing a poor job, they can lose their job. If somebody's here on a probationary period and they're not getting their work done, we let them go.
Long-term staff?
Long-term staff, if they're not doing their job and they've never been managed before, they find themselves being managed to do their work. Sometimes they decide to leave. Sometimes we end up letting them go, and that turns into legal action at times.
Okay. And why did you have to add 2 accounting positions?
Because we weren't keeping up with the workload. Because the process of paying the bills, the process of doing the utility billing staff, the longer-term staff could do work a lot faster than newer employees, and we're hoping with this new financial system that very likely, as staff leave, we might not replace them. I mean, that's the fact.
Do you want me to ask anything?
Yes, ma'am.
To kind of go
Sheila,
with
right?
Regarding staffing, several times tonight you mentioned that the positions, and I'm sure some of the positions are not conducive to work from home, but I would think accounting, once trained, especially if you're working on a system, that would be one that you could work from home.
Absolutely.
So is there at least some thought, because it seems that the responses from you have been very adamant against working from home. So is that something that you're considering? Because you have to be a competitive work environment, not just in pay, but in benefits and work environment as well.
Let me tell you, Sheila, we are bringing an item to the board this month to outsource the majority of our accounting services. Not our payroll, not our utility billing, but the basic accounting services that well-trained controllers, well-trained CPAs, well-trained accountants accomplish. And we're looking at a firm that does this for many, many special districts in California and throughout the country with a local representation. And we're bringing that forward to the board this month. We currently have vacancies in our controller and our account position, which we've been recruiting for some time. And we're going to use those salary savings, I think, to pay for that contract. And hopefully, when they get up and running, and they will do most of their work remote. I think their representative would come here about once a week, every other week. So yeah, you're absolutely right. But you have to get trained. And when we hire people, we check the references. They're all Michael Jordan, and it turns out they're not. They're Chris Webber or something like that. I don't know.
Well, you can't pay a Michael Jordan prices to come in.
Right. No. They all start. They all have a rookie contract.
And then it does make me kind of think and play forward. If we're going to outsource, it takes back to outsourcing security too. I mean, look at the savings. It seems to make sense.
Well, there's
too.
A 5-member board.
Yes, I know.
We're given direction and we follow directions.
Absolutely.
Or else I won't be here.
Sure, go ahead.
You keep saying if we were to switch security to a private security, there's going to be fees. We have to pay pension trust fund and somebody else. Why is it that those fees would need to be paid if that was something we need to do? What are those fees that you're paying?
Boy, I'm going to be wrong. Do you know exactly?
Well, you're buying out retirement.
Well,
we would have to buy out retirement.
Isn't that something that's taken out of the check on a?
No.
No.
In your world, yes. In my world, yes. In that world, no. That's just the way it works.
Our pensions, after when you work for a government agency, commonly in California, We're a CalPERS agency, and once you've worked here for 5 years, you have a guaranteed pension, right? You're vested in the retirement system, and granted, it's only about 8% of your annual income, but after 30 years, it's pretty attractive. But if somebody is in that line to receive a long-term pension, some actuarial can figure it out, and they're going to say, oh, that's worth this much more money over the life of X, and so the district has to contribute this amount of money. I've never seen it happen, but I've heard that it happens, and if the board instructs me to do that, then I can really answer your question because I'll figure it out. But I know there's cost to it. In addition, and Ted will tell you, he's taken on unions in the past, but generally when you take away union jobs, the union hall is not real happy about it. I don't know if they'd come out here and deal with us or if they just paper us, but I think the Teamsters union is pretty strong, and that's who our represented employees are represented by, the Teamsters. OE3 is what it's called. Yes, ma'am.
I have a comment on that. We had a bookstore that we outsourced and was no longer a part of PERS. There was no buyouts required. They had been in PERS for 25 years or whatever, and the new bookstore took them over, and the company did not pay PERS any more than what we had already paid them monthly through their salaries. Some of the employees chose to retire, which in that case they were eligible for the post-retirement health benefits, mm-hmm. which we had put away for. But the ones that were too young to retire, they are able to retire when they reach that age, but they only have that many years of service in that they were in. There was no added anything to it. So I have had experience in that.
Well, I do know that most agencies in California have what is considered an unfunded liability with CalPERS.
Yeah, we have that.
And the district's unfunded liability, did you tell me it's $4
million? $4.3.
And so some of the employees within security division would be eligible for some of that $4.3. And maybe that we have to pay it up front like right now. It may be that it gets amortized like it's being amortized now over many years. But we'd still be paying those monies. And again, I'm not an expert in this. If asked to look into it, I'll have really good answers in the near future.
Yeah, we probably had as many employees as CSD have leave that were PERS employees.
And where was that?
Sac State.
Okay.
When we outsourced the bookstore.
Now, I was trying to figure out how the bookstore had CalPERS retirement. That makes sense now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the
CalSTRS, right?
No.
CalPERS?
CalPERS, the auxiliary on campus, had the bookstore for 30, 40 years, and they outsourced it to Follett.
Interesting. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate the information.
Okay.
Oh, the letters are here.
They might be here. I could change my mind if I want to hand them over or not. Anyways.
That would be fine.
Who are you, if I may ask?
Sure, that's what I was getting to. My name is Heather Kraft. I've lived in Rancho Murrieta for about 18 years now. I have raised 4 kids out here. I have a 22-year-old. I have one in college in San Francisco State. And I have twins that are still here. So, anyways, one of the things that I wanted to say is that, you know, it's like I'm not on a fixed income, unfortunately, in this economy. You know, and my mortgage isn't paid off either. So one of the things that I'd like to see as a mom and somebody who is a resident out here is to see you guys look and see what you can cut from the budget. Because all I feel like when I look at my CSD bill, it's no different than when I hear from my 19-year-old daughter at San Francisco State University. Every time she needs more money, it's just like, just open up your wallet. And that's how I feel when I'm here. So, and then the other thing was I can't believe that you guys are paying so much money to like a golfing buddy when we have like sinkholes that are a possibility for the surveys. The surveys, is that how you guys met him? He golfs out here? That's what you said earlier, right?
No. We did an RFP, request for proposal, and he's a Southern California company, but it caught his eye when it hit the, you know, when you do an RFP and you post it, and then people notice it. So he turned it, he applied, and he won the bid process.
All I see from you guys, like from what I hear, is that there's like major constructional issues that need to be taken care of, and we're spending a shit ton of money
on surveys and community education. Like, that's a lot of money to just be throwing out there for surveys when we have, like, real issues. And, you know, and it's like, I was affected definitely whenever somebody went joyriding in the back of the lake out there last year. I called up CSD because the water wasn't working in my house and I was freaking out. I thought I had a pipe burst or whatever. The receptionist who answered the phone, she told me, oh, don't worry about it. We'll have it fixed by 3 p.m. Then hours later, I see a notice going out saying, don't drink the water. After I have small children and myself, we all got water poisoning from that. And I still went out and bought water for all my neighbors in town. So I just, I'm not necessarily a fan. So it's something. But anyways, since you're so excited, here is a stack of some of the letters that we have recorded. So there's about 450. Hold on.
Oh,
there we go.
Thank you, Heather.
I'm not going to wait for the pennies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This open government is really important. I appreciate everyone who came here tonight. It's great to see activity and people who want to have a voice. This is what we're here for. I want to thank everyone for coming here, staying late. Ted, for all the hard work you've done. I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
Thank you.